So I think that is one of the most issues.
Okay, I think my topic for today is Hilchos Shechita. So what I'm going to do is just a very, very brief overview of some of the basic concepts in Shechita, and maybe bring it at the end towards, you know, a contemporary issue in terms of Shechita. If you have all of Hilchos Shechita here, or just part of it?
No, I did some in Yud Ches.
Oh, okay. So just by way of introduction, I'm going to start with it, which you don't have a copy of then. That's Simen Aleph in Hilchos Shechita. First, you know, in terms of the halacha of Shechita itself, is Shechita a mitzvah or not? There is a machlokes between the Rambam, if you look here in the Ban Yad Avraham, between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam counts Shechita in Minyan and Mitzvahs. If this Ravid is in the Seven Mitzvahs HaKotzer at the beginning of the Yad HaChazaka. So the Rambam counts Shechita as a mitzvah, and the Ravid is Masig that it shouldn't be counted in the Mitzvahs. So if you look at the very bottom, well, you can't look. I don't know how. But Ravid Basokosu She'ain Lo Tam, and the Kes Mikshus She'ain Tamashel HaRavid Meshum She'ain Zeh Mitzvah Mechuyevet She'im Yitzu Shlo Lecha Boso Shlo Lishchol Be'atzmon Shoy Elohu Lava Ba Mechal Asei She'tochel Shchuta V'lo Evi Menachayu Nevela V'lo Das Aram Tiyus HaKes Shmurt Mikom Makom Hu Asei Lemi She'yitzu Lecha Boso She'yishchol Oba Atzmo Osha'acha Yishkotlo. So I always think that this machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid, where the Shechita is counted in Minyan Mitzvahs, may be related to how we understand Shechita, how it functions. Actually, I once had a discussion. The first one was Ma'ayva, this was in my mind, was with Shmuel Birnbaum Zichron Levracha. Many, many years ago, we were together by Rebbe Gerelich Yeshiva in the mountains, and he was learning Chul, and this is what we were talking about. How do you understand Shechita? Is Shechita that there's an Issa Eivim Menachai, or an Issa Einu Zavuach, and Shechita comes and is matir that Issa, so Shechita is a matir? Or no, Shechita is not a matir at all. The halacha is, if an animal is killed or dies not in accordance with the halachas of Shechita, the five halachas of Shechita, which we'll talk about later, so then the animal is nevela. But it's not that Shechita is a matir. It's simply that the part of the definition of Shechita, namely, that's the definition of basa that's mutter, is basa shenishchat, you know, al pi halachas Shechita, according to the five halachas of Shechita. But it's not per se that it's a matir. The Rav assumed, by the way, that Shechita is a matter, and he said that the bracha that we say on Shechita, he said that bracha, he didn't think it was a kima mitzvah. He said there's a whole sukkah of birkas mitzvahs that are a bracha on the matir. For example, to Yadayim, the bracha on Eruv, according to the Ravid, the Taz quotes it here in Hirshel Shechita, interestingly, that the bracha on Kedushin is done after the Kedushin. It could be a bracha on the Chalois. The Rav thought there was a bracha in the Birkas Mil, the bracha that we say afterward, you know, Lachnisa Bavisa Shel Avraham Avinu. The Rav thought that that's a bracha on the Chalois Ben Bris. So there is such a bracha on the Chalois, and he thought that the Birkas Shechita was an example of that. But I thought that this was related to this Rambam and Ravid, because according to the Rambam, that is counted in Minyan Mitzvahs, it doesn't necessarily mean that when one does Shechita, it's because he's Mekayim Mitzvah, that's one possibility. But the Rambam also counts in Yonei HaTorah. I once heard this from the Rav. He said that, you know, the Bahag counts in Minyan Mitzvahs, Mitzvahs Drabonin also. This is one of the Rambam's revolutions when he reinvented the Minyan Mitzvahs. but his hasoga on the bahag was you can't count mitzvahs drabonim. So the Rav explained, and what did the bahag think? Of course, why should mitzvahs drabonim be counted? So the Rav said that the reason the bahag counts mitzvahs drabonim because in minyan mitzvahs we don't only count isurim or kiyume hamitzvah. We count, after all, we have a mitzvah, shomachinam, shomachsochot, that's right, those are mitzvahs and minyan mitzvahs. So what we count is not only mitzvahs, but also inyonei ha-Torah. And a mitzvah drabonon, even though the kiyum is a mitzvah drabonon, but it's a chefshel shel Torah midiraisa. If a person studies Maseches Megillah, which most of the lochs of the Masech that deal with mitzvahs drabonon, Kriyas HaTorah, the mitzvahs of Purim and so on, he's not fulfilling only a mitzvah drabonon of Talmud Torah, he's fulfilling a mitzvah midiraisa of Talmud Torah. There's no advantage, the Rav said, to study Maseches Zvachim, which is, deals primarily with only mitzvahs midiraisa, to Megillah, which is dealing with mitzvahs drabonon, because drabonons are also part of midiraisa, the chefsa shel Torah. For example, if a person will take a Maseches Megillah and burn it, if we assume that if the Rav says that you're oven lo sason, if you burn Gemaris and so on, Torah Shabbat Be'er, the Kesef Mishnah says that he thinks it's only that that's only drabonon. The Rav assumed that was an isur d'oraisa. He said if you'll take a Maseches Megillah and you'll burn it, you'll be oven the isur lo sason midiraisa. So it's a chefsa shel Torah midiraisa. And that's why the Baha'i counts in a minyan mitzvah. And it was going to suggest like this. According to the Rambam, that Shechita is a chalois. And the inyone, so then there's an inyan, there's the parsha, so to speak, of Shechita. And therefore that parsha is counted in minyan mitzvah. According to the Ravid, Shechita is not a matir. Shechita just defines that this meat was not called nevela. So therefore it's just, as the Ravid says, a lava b'amichlal aseh, and should be counted in minyan mitzvah. I just want to just show you, in terms of whether it is a chalois, Riki Vega in Hilcha Shechita certainly holds that Shechita is a chalois and a matir, because Riki Vega asks, if a person shechts on Shabbos, so the first time he shechts, the Shechita is ksheir, he's not a mumah, because he only becomes a mumah at the end, we're going to talk about this. So Riki Vega asks, why is the Shechita kosher? The Shechita should be invalid, because it's called Mr. Machman Lo Savid Yavid Lo Mahani. So Kivega has a discussion about that. So, what's the kasha? Shechita is not a chalois. What is, right? So you see that from Kivega thinks that Shechita, that there's a chalois Shechita, and therefore if it was done by Isa, we should say that it's not chal because of that principle, Yavid Lo Mahani. The next thing I wanted to speak about and relates to the very beginning of Hilcha Shechita that tells us, these are the first words in Yeridea, HaKol Shochtim L'chadchila Afilu Noshim, that everybody can shecht, even women. And Ramos says, Yesh Omen She'en L'haniach Noshim Lishchot She'kfar Nogu Shelo Lishchot V'chein HaMinhag She'en HaNoshim Shochtos, that the minig is that women don't shecht. The source for this, that women don't shecht, which is our minig according to the Ramor, one of the sources is the Mordechai quotes in the name of Eldad Hadoni, or the Hilchas Eretz Yisrael. Eldad Hadoni was a mysterious figure who appeared in the Middle Ages and claimed that he came from the other side of this miraculous river, the Sambatyon, where the he came from Sheva Dan, and that's where the Aseres Hashvatim were. And he came with a whole list of new halachas and so on. And amongst the halachas, there were those who suspected that he was a fraud, even already at the time of the Goyim. So, but anyhow, the Mordechai quotes him, and that's the Hilchas Eretz, the Rosh is Hilchas Eretz Yisrael. You know, it's presumably that these were halachas that were formulated in Eretz Yisrael before Chubin Bayis Rishon already. These are that they had a Kabbalah on. Some suggest that the Hilchas Eretz Yisrael, the Rosh Hashanah is not Hilchas Eretz Yisrael, but it's Hilchas Amar Yehoshua. Because he quotes everything, you know, this is the Kabbalah we have, Ad Yehoshua Binun. But amongst the halachas that he has is that a woman shouldn't shecht. He also has a halacha that if you shecht without a bracha, he says the shechit is psula, pigul, to use his word. But one of them is that a woman can't shecht. Whether and the Mechaber says that a woman can shecht. The Ramah says that our minig is not to let them shecht, and that's only a minig. So why is it? What's the basis of this minig that women don't shecht? So I mean, there are lots of reasons given. You know, there's a chashash maybe. Shemi is Aleph. In general, look, the first time you do shechita, you know, the first time a doctor does surgery, you know, sees a cadaver, may faint. So, the fairer sex are more susceptible to that. But I wanted to share with you something that I heard from the Rav. The reason I'm sharing it with you is not just because it's a good word, but it's a very important principle in the attitude of Hashkochas vis-a-vis Shechita, and I'm going to explain why in a second. The Rav said that the pshat, why women don't shecht, our minig is, he said that the halacha is hakol shochtim, but there was a that Shechita was transformed. The Ramah says that we don't let somebody shecht unless he has Kabbalah in Shechita, and he has a Ksav Kabbalah. So, v'chein nogim she'ein adam shoychit ele im kein notel Kabbalah l'chein chocham. Right? And the Ramah quotes this in the name of the Hilchas Eretz Yisrael. V'ein ha'chocham nosin l'kabbalah ad she'yedabo she'yodei hilchas Shechita u'boki b'yad. V'lechein nogim she'kol ha'boin lishchot shomchin alein l'chadchila v'lo b'adkinin also lo b'adkila v'lasov the chol mitzunet shechita mumkinheim, but also that they got Kabbalah and shechita, and we only let experts shecht. Ramos says v'yesh lebez den lachkov v'lidros acha habotkin v'hashochtim v'liro shiyu bekim mumkim ukshevim ki gadol isa hamachshela v'shechitus b'dikus hamesun lekom v'imbotko eze and so on. All right, So the Ramah says, also based on the Hilchas Eretz Yisrael, that we require that shochtim get Kabbalah and they be tested and so on. And what happened through this institution of Kabbalah is that it transformed the position of the shochet. That the shochet is a person who's really a mamuna aydei hakol. That shechita is a minoy in the shochet. And that's what requires Kabbalah. And therefore, the Rav suggested, if Shechita is a minui, we know that the Rambam says that Noshim, the Rambam says in Hilchas Melachim, that Noshim are excluded from every minui. We learned that from the Loch Melech v'lo Malka. And therefore, since this is a minui hakol, therefore Noshim don't share. Proof to this, what the Rav quoted, is that the Beis Yosef quotes in the name of some Rishonim, I think the Ogur or the Kolbo, he quotes that that even though women don't shecht, that's only lachelim, but laatzman they can't shecht. So I mean, if she's not qualified lachelim, she shouldn't be qualified for herself either. Why the chiluk? So the Rav said that the pshat is like this: laachelim, the Hechshet Shechita requires a minui, and Noshim are excluded from that. But La'atzman, for themselves, they can shech, because you can shech out of minui if you're shechting for yourself. If you're shechting for somebody else, that represents a certain position and svara. We know historically that in Europe, you know, in the shtetlach and the cities, you know, the most respected position was the Rav in town. But, you know, right after them, the Rav, then there was the Dayan, and then there was the... there was the shochet. Shochet was a considered important position. Says in the Ramah, shochet has to study Hilchas Shechita, he has to be Yerush Shemayim. So, in fact, socially, that's what actually happened, that the shochet became sort of, you know, it's a position, a munah lekach. And therefore, women are excluded. Just the proof to this is that the Gemara said, the Shulchan Aruch says, that if somebody, this is in Sif Yud Aleph, in Siman Aleph. Yimetil hakol chem shol yishchot el tabach yaduah v'shochet acha yesh om shishchitoso asura. So the question is that why should a shechita be not good? So the Shach says maybe it's a choshir because he violated the Chayim HaKol. But it could be, based on what the Rav said, that since every minui, every shoychid requires a minui, and he's representing the call, so therefore if he shechts, and there was a Chayim HaKol without permission, so therefore they asked the shechita. Just like you require Kabbalah, that's also part of the minui HaKol. Without it, the shechita is not valid. The reason I say this is an important concept, I used to always, when I'd go up to the Shlachtas, I used to say over this board from the Rav, because I wanted to, you know, to emphasize this idea that Shochtim have to feel a sense of responsibility to the call. They represent the call. And one of the problems that used to be in Shchit in America was sometimes we'd have good Shochtim, but you know, they'd end up in the Shlachtas with a 90-something% kosher rate. There were hardly any treifas, because they used to have these magical boydik chutz who would everything was kosher. But the shochet was an elach shochet. So he'd say, listen, I'm doing elach. On the contrary, I'm making sure that it's all geshocht and kavoy and so on. What later on the boydik would checking for the treifas doing, that's his asik. That kind of a division of labor or dichotomy leads to terrible consequences, especially in terms of the standards of kashrus. And that's what I think we have to emphasize, that shechita is a mini hakol, and that you have to have a sense of responsibility for the call, not just your particular surgery that you're doing on this animal, but responsibility for the community, and that encompasses the entire operation.
So getting back to the first thing that was said, for the rough fold, that it's also a matter by Shkita's Kachim also, or Shkita's Kachim might be a mitzvah?
That's a good question. Shkita's Kachim, it could be that Shkita's Kachim is a mitzvah to one of the Dalit Avoidus. So that's probably it's part of the kiyum of the hakvava. Mm-hmm. Whether shechitas chulin is derived from shechitas kachim or not, the Rav said is a machlokes rishonim. He claimed this was a machlokes Rashi and Ramban and Chumash. Rashi says that the halacha shechitas chulin, we learn it's a halacha l'mos mesina. We learn it from. So kasher tzvisicha means halacha l'mos mesina. The Ramban in Chumash learns it from Kachim. The Zavachta is referring to Shchitas Kachim, and derivative of that is what Shchitas Chulin. So, and it could be the Nafgamina in this, the Marshal, the Ramban, there's a locha by Shchita that you have to shecht. The definition of Shchita is you have to shecht how much? What do you have to shecht? Who knows? Conversion, and you have to shecht how much of the conversion? Both, right? But lechatchila, how much should you shecht? So lechatchila, you have to shecht kulo, right? So the Ramban holds, has a suffix about this, Ramban the Chidushim in Chulin, whether that halacha that lechatchila should shecht kulo, is that a din d'oraisa or din d'rabbanan? The Rav said that the tzad in the Ramban, that it's a din d'oraisa that you should shech kulo, is because since the Ramban the shitaso thinks that shechitas chulin is derived from shechitas kachim, right? So just by shechitas kachim there's a kiyum, and that's why there's a locha, because in a mati you can't have a mixas and a kulo, if it's mutti after mixaso, namely after rov. So what's kulo midiraisa? The answer is maybe in the kiyum. And the Ramban holds that midiraisa applies also to shechitas chulin. So you see that he thinks there's a kiyum.
So
for
the Rabban, assuming we applied the Ramban, there would also be a
matir? No, I mean it's certainly also a matir, but it could be that he would think that it's also. You're right. There might be that there's a kiyum a mitzvah. I think it was something psychological. The Rabban was loath to think that it was a kim. He said, I know the shochtim. I mean, this shochet the shef in 2,000 oifas, you know, getting 2,000 mitzvahs. I don't know. Maybe he just said it to be dramatic, but you're right. It could be from that, from shechitas kachim. If it's survived from shechitas kachim, it may be that it's a kim. You know, the bracha that we say on shechita, the Rush says, is derivative of shechitas kachim. Now, the bracha was really established ala shechita by kachim, and then it was borrowed for chula. So, I mean, maybe that goes with the Ramban, that there's a kim. In fact, the Rambam is mashma, that it's a din diraisa. I mean, it's not conclusive in the Ram, but if you look at the Lashon Ram when he speaks about that, in Hilchos Shechita, when he says about the Rambam says Ram says in Halacha, Perek Av Halacha says, "V'kama hu shir hashchita, shnei hasimonim shein hakona v'haveshet, hashchita hameula sheyechtuchu shneim ben bebehem ben be'of, ulzei yiskaven hashoichet, v'mshochet rov echa mehem be'of, rov shnan bebehem, u'b'chayim shchitos ha'ksheira." So when he says hashchita hameula, that's the Lashon of Ram, you get the impression that it sounds like a divisive din. It's not a conclusion, you can say you get, that's the impression I get. You get like that day in the Ramban. I was actually thinking just a mind, you know, what to ask. Is Shechitas Kachim, what's the relationship between Shechitas Kachim and Shechitas Chulin? You know, the Rambam, we're going to, there's a lot, one of the five Hilchos Shechita, I'll just jump ahead, is Shehiyah, right? You're not allowed to pause during the Shechita. It has to be continuous action. So how much is the Shehiyah? So the Gemara says it's the shear that it takes to do the shechita, right? And the Rambam, right? So that we have here in Hilch Shear is he says. Shir Ketzer, the Mechaber says in Halacha Sif Beis, Harei Shehischil Lishchot V'Gbir Yado Kodem Shiyigmo HaShchita V'Shor Ben B'Shogi Ben B'Meizit Ben B'Oynes and so on of Gam HaShchit Im Shor Kedei Shiyagbir Behem V'Yamitzena V'Yishchot V'Shir Shir Ba'Of V'Behem Daka Kedei Shiyagbir Behem Daka V'Yamitzena V'Yishchot. Right? So that's the Shittas of Rambam. The Shir is how much, you know, so that you can do the shechita of the what do you call it? The amount that you pour, it would take to do the shechita. So if it's a behema, it's the shir, of a gasa. If it's a small animal, let's say it's a sheep, not cattle, then it's kidei shir what? Relative to that. Namely, it will be the time that it takes to shecht a daka, which is less, right? But the Ram says by oath, the Mechaber following the Shittas Ram says that the shear by oath is also kidei sheyagbia habehemu v'yabitzena v'yishchot, right? So that's strange. That we would have thought, and Tosis actually disagrees with the Ram. Tosis says there's machlokes in the Gemara Ram Shmuel whether the shir shehiyah is always standard, or is it relative to each animal that you're shechting. So the Rama paskins that it's relative, namely, if it's you're shechting a behema, the shir shehiyah pausing is longer than if it's Behemadaka, right? So we would have thought then that by oath, the shear should be not how much you you're showing her by a behemoth daka, but she should be sheer off la off. So, you know that's strange. Why does the Rambam say that a sheer daka, you know, daka la off? Why isn't that? I mean, if it's a standard amount, she, you know, sheer shechita, let's say gasa for everything. So then I understand there's a certain standard. That's the sheer shehir. But once you go, and the Rambam passes that's relative. Then l'chayu by of, it should also be sheer of la'of. And that's what Tosis says. So why does the Rambam say that it's what do you call it, sheer daka la'of? So I thought that the answer might be this, that the Rambam thinks that the dinei shechita, that shechita is derived from shechita's kachin. So therefore, but he thinks it's relative. But he can't say off la off by if it's fundamentally say by kachim, there is no shchitas off by kachim. It's malika. Shchita doesn't apply by off, right? So therefore he borrowed the closest one to it, namely daka. But that's because he couldn't. But if you say the shchita, as Tosis says, if you say that the shiya is what do you call it? You know, if you say that the sheer shechita of the halacha shechita by chulin is not related to kachim, so then it has its own independent sheer, and there is a shechita's off. That's what Tosis held. The Rambam thought it's derivative of kachim, and therefore he didn't have a shechita's off, and that's why he borrowed it from right. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, we pask in that the Shia Shihi, the Mamor is Machmer, that the Shia Shihi is even though Medina, there's a certain Shia, Kedei Gasa L'Gasa, and so on. But the Mamor says that we're Machmer, the minig is Lahatrif Kol Shia Afil Mashu, Ben Ba'ov Ben Be'behema, the Ein L'Shanos. So, if the Shoichik will be Shoya at all, then we pass over the Behema. The reason, just in the lumdus of it, I heard from the Rav, he said like this. He said that the reason the Shia Shihiyah is Kol Shehu is because since there is since by oath, conceptually, there is a Shechitas Mashu. How is that? Because by oath, by behemoth, you have to shech two simon. By oaf, you only have to shech one simon. And that one simon could be the kana. The kana is the trachea. And you don't have to shech through the whole kana. If the Rambam says, chatzi kana pogom. If half the kana was severed in any way, not through shechita, and you just brought it over from half over to make it roll, that's a good shechita. So therefore, conceptually, what's the minimum shechita? Mashu. Bring it from machza to roll. And by oaf you have such a what do you call it, a shear. So therefore we use that standard. That's the minig that's called a shear by shechita, and that passes everything. All right. There are five hilchos shechita. Want to mention, well, the first one we mentioned is Shehiyah, pausing. The others, which are in Simon Chaf Dalet, are Drosha, Chalada, Hagvama, and Ikra. Just to go over what they mean, Drosha means that if you didn't, it's not a sort, you know, what do you call it, a back and forth action, but it's a chopping action. So the Shechit is Pasul. Chalada is if the knife was covered during the Shechita, but the knife has to be exposed. For example, we tell a shoykhah when you shech, some shoykhah have a tendency to do, which becomes a problem of chalada, and could be a problem of drasa. If they hold the knife like this, and the blade is exposed, that's okay. But if they put their finger on the blade and they shech like this, there could be a problem of drasa, because they may have a tendency to push it down. And if they cover the knife with their fingers, then it could be a problem of chalada.
Meaning even the back part? Meaning even the not sharp side?
No. I meant to say the part they're shechting with.
Oh.
Right. Hagvama is that he shech shalom b'makom shechita. And ika, there's a machloikis what ika means between Rashi and Rahag, whether ika means sak and pogum, that there's a nick in the knife has to be sharp and unblemished. And the other pshat is nidal dulu simonim im koma. Ika means that the simonim are not in their place in Yishechtim. There is machloikis b'shainim. What if I shechted rov and in the last I did that fine, and if I stopped after rov, the shechita is kosher, right? That's rov is kosher by shechita. But let's say I continued to shecht and then I have shoyer b'miyat basra, and the last at the end of the simen. I did a b'psul. I started to shecht, I stopped and I continued, right? Is that shechita kosher or not? So Rashi holds, shir b'miyat basra is possible. And we're machmen like Rashi. Other Rishonim hold that it's not possible. I mean, the chiddush of Rashi is, why should shir be possible b'miyat basra? After all, if I didn't shecht at all, the animal would be kosher, because I did rov. So who cares that I was shoyer in the miyat basra, right? So you see two things from Rashi. First of all, you see that Rashi thinks that shahir is not simply that there's a chson and tziruf, that if I shecht it, that it's, you know, it doesn't integrate into the rov. You don't need the rov. I shecht it, right? You see that Rashi thinks that shahir is a psul. And the other thing that you see about rov by shechita is that rov is sufficient, but that you need that. It's not just rov. It's really the halach is ruba kakulo. So if I shecht rov, it's as if I shecht the whole. But if I continue to shecht the whole, the kulo, it's integrated into the shechita. And Rashi therefore holds that if I continue to shecht, that shechita is, you know, is b'psul. Right. This is quoted in the Ramor in Chaf Gimel, which you do have. Tafil b'di'evin haminig lahatu v'chein im l'achas sheshochet rov shnayim. Show a behema, o ha'oth. Lamos yakenu al rosha, la miso velo yachso v'yishcho. Tumas adech v'tash Rashi. In other words, let's say I shecht, and the animal is not dying, or the bird is not dying, right? I should try to kill it in a different way, but not by continuing the shechita, because that'll be a problem of shir b'miyat basra. So you see that the loch of rov, according to Rashi, is buba kakulo. Right, and that may be the reason that the lechatchila of shecht and kulo then is because lechatchila should really even rov is kulo, so there's a kiyum to shecht kulo. Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about just about the story in Rubashkin. You know, how did this story all begin, this sad saga? So it really began a little bit more than 4 years ago when PETA, which is People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, which is a you know, aggressive, let's be euphemistic, animal rights organization got into the Vashkin plant and took videos of the Shechita, and this is what they found. They found two things. First of all, they found that when they were shechting the animal, they would cut, after the Shechita, they would cut the you know, when we shecht, at the same time that we're cutting the Kanevesh, it was really the halachic requirement, we also cut the vridim. The vridim are the arteries that feed the brain. You know, you're supposed to cut the vridim.
What are they called?
Vridim.
Vridim.
Right. What are they called?
Carotid
arteries. Right. And those are the primary arteries that, you know, that bring blood to the brain. So when you cut those arteries, the animal bleeds out, and it usually becomes unconscious, within a matter of seconds, half a minute, something like that, a minute. But you don't always cut those arteries. You don't always cut them either. Sometimes because the anatomy of the animal, they're further back, or sometimes the shochet just didn't reach it, or even if you did cut it, what I'm told by doctors is that these arteries can seal on themselves. So after you cut them, you don't have a complete drainage of the blood in the brain. The artery closes, and there's a sort of a pool of blood still in the brain, circulating the brain, which can give it, you can still be conscious for a longer time. So, in Agri, the one thing which they were doing, which they shouldn't have been doing, was they, in order to try to avoid a problem that sometimes they have during shechit, which is called blood splash or blood blood splash. What that means that the blood doesn't drain completely, and you have sort of like pockets of blood in the capillaries, and that meat gets very black, and you can't sell that meat. The housewife is not going to buy that meat. It's also a problem, by the way, Alpitin, whether you can do melicha on that meat, because maybe that meat is the area where it's black and bruised is dam be'en, and you can't do melicha dam be'en. So there's a tremendous economic interest to try to avoid that. Having the animal bleed out more is helpful. And what they sometimes do is they cut this extra artery in order to make sure, that it becomes unconscious and bleeds better. And what they were doing is they were taking out the trachea, which the artery, is on the side of the trachea as well, and cutting that artery again. And so that's not a bad procedure. But the real problem, yeah.
Halakhically, or just in terms of aesthetics?
No. Both in terms of in terms of stress and pain for the animal, and also, the aesthetics of it. In other words, the other thing that they had, which made it difficult for them, was that they insisted at Agri to have a rotating pen. And the reason they had a rotating pen is there are those who believe, that there's a mila to have the animal inverted during the shechita, that's on its back. The reason for that is based on this halach in Shulchan Aruch, in Sivvav halacha dalit.
First page of your packets.
It says, Nod sakin b'koysel obadov ha'tolos v'hevi ha'tzava ha'tzava ad she'nishchet shechitoso k'sheira. For who she? Simon Vav Siftal.
The first page in your pants.
Right. No, right. Not Bakoisil, Obadova Tolish. Vehevet Sav Al In other words, I mean, there are two ways. You can either move the knife back and forth, or you can move, keep, have the knife stationary, and you're moving the head back and forth. Then the Mechaber says, "For who she had tzava habehema lamata, va'asakin lamala." Right? Shim hayat tzava behema lamala mi'asakin shema teved habehema bekoved gufo v'tachtoch belo halacha vava ve'ein zu shchita. Right. So there are those who interpret the Simcha Chatos, others that Dr. Tshuva quotes a sefer, what's it called? Hilchos HaZevach, I forgot what it's called. I think Hilchos HaZevach. The Moshe quotes it in that shoot. Do you have that shoot? Yeah. No. The thing that makes it insensate is not the shechita; it's the cutting of the arteries.
You do it after
the shechita,
no?
You don't. In other words, if there's still blood going to the brain. You're 100% right. In almost all cases, 97% of the cases, when you do the regular shechita, you've cut the arteries, and it's not conscious. And, you know, and I spoke, when I went...
Yeah, the thing is that if you cut the simonim, and then halakhically, the animals are shot.
You're right.
So, you can cut the
reading
afterwards, it doesn't make a difference.
No, but I'm just talking about biologically, right? If you cut the trachea and esophagus, the animal can still survive, right? It just the thing that makes it insensitive, right, unconscious, is stopping the blood flow to the brain. The trachea and the esophagus per se won't do it. I mean, after a while, of course, if you have a cut throat, you're not going to do so well. But you have to cut the arteries to stop the flow of blood, all right? So that's why the loch is in Shulchan Aruch, because the Hilchos Melicha, that if you're going to eat a whole animal, you have to cut the freedom, otherwise the blood won't come out.
I think if we're considering the animal dead already, are we concerned about the Baal HaChaim at that point?
I mean, that's a halachic question.
Yeah.
First of all, it's not, at that point, it's not dead. If it's Mefacheses, it's alive. Right? Mefacheses is not dead, it's Geshochten. But it's not dead. No, the concern here was a practical concern, not the halachic concern. It didn't affect the kashrus of the animal. The concern was just, you know, how Peter was looking out. We're learning Hilchos Peter right now, right? So so for them, since it was a rotated pen. The animal, when it was let out of the pen, could they had pictures of it walking around. Now that didn't happen often, but they didn't, you know, they didn't show you all the animals. They just, you know, the chosen 1 in 100 that might, you know, still be conscious and walking around. But it was very rare. And you know, when I spoke to the USDA inspectors, the veterinarians on the spot, you know, they considered these animals to be dead. You know, not the ones walking around, but most of them. So, but the thing that made them vulnerable, so to speak, is this rotating pen. Now, the reason they have the rotating pen is because of this din Shulchan Aruch that says that the shechita should be mil mala lamata, because otherwise there's a chashash of drasha, as the shach says over here. It's the minchas hasefer, it just comes back for a minute. Right? That he's saying that this that you can check malmat lamal is only b'di'evet, right? So if it's only b'di'evet, the way we normally shech, except not in agri, is that the animal comes into a pen, and the animal, it walks in, it's into a box, its head goes through a hole, and then there's a brace that lifts up the head of the animal, and then there's a hydraulic lift underneath the belly of the animal that picks it up, so it's not on its feet, so it doesn't have traction, and then you shecht it, right? So it's immobilized, but you're shechting, the animal's head is sort of tilted, and you're shechting on an angle, down, up, right, on an angle. So there are those who say, well, the shach says that's only good b'di'evet, right? Just, it's a chash drasa, so we shouldn't shecht that way. Let's invert the animal. Well, what they did there is they were doing that at Agri, so there were several problems with that. First of all, it's an economic problem. It's enormously inefficient because you have to turn the animal upside down, and then after you shecht, you turn it right side up again, and then it sort of slides out from the side. They put a shackle on its, you know, on its leg, and they lift it away. But if it's walking around, it's hard to do that. So and it doesn't look good. It's this shach that got them, frankly, into trouble. So that's what that is not the pshat the shach, right? So that's what I think we the Prima Godim says that's not the shach, the pshat the shach. The Rav thought that wasn't the pshat the shach. The shach is talking about when the animal's head is, you know, it's a continuation of the case of Machaber, that where the knife is stationary and you're moving the head over the knife. So then you want to make sure that there's no problem with the drasa, so you want the knife on top, because otherwise the neck can collapse on the knife, because after you have to begin shechting it, the animal can't keep the muscles, you know, atrophy, and it can't keep its head up. So it'll collapse on the knife, and then it'll be a drasa, not a, you know, halacha v'havah. That's the case that the shach is talking about. And Rabbi Schwartz told me that actually there's a tshuva about this in the Igros Maisha, in, I think, it's Zirak's here?
Yeah.
So it's in Chelek Beis Yerodeyeh, Sif Yud Gimel, and Rabbi Maisha says this. So, yeah, you wanted to answer?
Yeah, the Mahara says that the weight of the head will fall, but if the animal is immobilized and lifted up, so then the head is already being suspended, so why is there worry that the head is going to, like what you said, that the head is in a break.
That's 100% correct. That's what Ramesh says in his tshuva. He says even those, he quotes Zevach and others, right, he says they would agree even l'chatchila, if you could hold the animal's head up, right, so that, and which is what we do, we have it in a brace, then there should be no problem even l'chatchila. It's interesting, this tshuva that Rav Moshe writes is written to Rav Hirschsprung in Montreal. The reason he wrote it to Rav Hirschsprung was Canada was going to disallow shechita, and the compromise was that the way they used the shecht before was to have a shechita, the way shechita was done was shackling and hoisting. They would shackle the animal, hoist it up, right, and then shecht it while it was up. There's two problems with that kind of a shechita. One problem is a security problem. It's, you know, a shochet could be hurt, and there were several shochet that were killed, because if the animal lets loose and kicks the shochet, it can kill the shochet. I was just meeting last week in my office with Rabbi Eckstein. He's the Kashrus administrator for KAJ, and he's also a shochet. And he said a few years ago he was kicked by an animal, and he was in bad shape for a year, and there were shochet that were killed. So in terms of the security of the shochet, that's not a great system. The other disadvantage is, you know, in terms of tzar bale chayim, you know, shackling and hoisting is, you know, stressful and painful for the animal. And we're concerned about stress and pain for animals. First of all, Tzabel Chaim is a derisive principle. And the Gemara says animals have some sense, which we know they do, of what's happening. And that's why the law is that you're not allowed to shecht one animal, you know, in front of another animal. Because, you know, the stress that it'll get. So animals know they're frightened. So that was the problem with the shackling and hoisting. What happened was, just in terms of the history, I spoke about it just a little bit, just for a moment, when we had that panel discussion. But in the 1950s, in the late 50s, when the United States Congress passed the Humane Slaughter Act, I think it was in 1958, but the Jewish community, and the Rav was the spearhead of this, or Soloveitchik was the spearhead of this, they organized, first of all, to lobby to make sure that Shechita would not be excluded by the Humane Slaughter Act. And in fact, this Isaac Lewin actually was, Dr. Isaac Lewin, Nat Lewin's father, was very active. He was an agudist, and he was very active in this topic. He represented at, you know, the aguda in the United Nations. I think that was, you know, he was a very active agudist. I love to tell the story. The Satmar Rebbe's Gabi, the old Satmar Rebbe, Moshe Gabbai, Moshe Friedman, told me the story. He said he was once with the Satmar Rebbe, Reb Yoel, and he went to visit Dr. Lewin. He was friendly with him. He was in the hospital. So Dr. Lewin tells the Satmar Rebbe, he says, you know, the Aguda Convention must have been around Thanksgiving. It's about to come up. It would be so great if you would come to the Aguda Convention. So the Satmar Rebbe said, he said, wie wollt das, I'll explain it in exam, wie wollt das ausgeguckt? Ein agudistus and a zoi film is rachistin. He said, how would it look one aguda person amongst all the Mizrahi people, you know? Mm-hmm. So what the Rav did then was that he mobilized the Jewish community. This was not just him, but, you know, but he was really the forefront of this, that was then the JWB and others, and they invested money to develop the pen that I just described. And this was, of course, there was a lot of pressure at the time for the ASPCA and the animal welfare organizations were opposed to this shackling and hoisting. And the Rav said, you know, he was always ahead of the time. You know, he saw 50 years ahead. And he developed this pen, and they also did, you know, had scientists do research about the anatomy of Shechita, and, you know, in terms of how humane it was. And they did scientific, you know, neurological studies of it. And Congress did studies, and based on those findings, the Humane Slaughter Act of the United States says two things. First of all, it exempts Shechita from the provisions of the Act, and it also has a finding of Congress that Shechita is humane. And what the Rav did then was, they created this pen, and so smart, and he got the ASPCA to buy into this pen, even though they did all the money and the research was primarily the Jewish community, and they called this the ASPCA pen. How's that for marketing? And Vishokta Oritz, and you didn't hear anything about this story for 50 years, you know, until the Bashkin story, and the provisions of the Humane Slaughter Act, you know, are still in force today. So, you know, USDA inspectors in every slaughterhouse are told, well, if it's a kosher shechita, you know, it's a ritual slaughter, that, you know, they're exempt. You know, they step aside in terms, and they don't give you trouble in terms of the shechita, which, by the way, you know, you may don't take that for granted, because in most countries in the world, that's not the case. They disallow shechita. In the Scandinavian countries, shechita is not permitted. I remember, you know, when this story was happening with the Swiss banks, you know, the Holocaust money and the World Jewish, you know, what was it, the World Jewish
Congress,
thank you, with Bronfman, were all involved about it. So they had a provision at that time. They want, in Switzerland, they don't permit Shechita, only, not of gases, only of ophos, only of birds. So, but they were planning to eliminate that as well. So I met with the Swiss ambassador, I think it was the Council General at the time, And I said, you know, it seems to me, while they're having all this discussion about the halakas money being hidden in, you know, absconded with in Swiss banks, that this is not the right time to raise this issue. And they actually, you know, they dropped it. But in a lot of Scandinavian countries, it's not permitted. And in England, it was a big issue. And, you know, the compromise was they put in place this kind of a pen. So it's not just America. We live in a blessed country. But, you know, we can't presume that that's the case all around the world. So, you know, yeah.
Prior to having a pen that can flip someone off, let's say 300 years ago in Poland, how did they restrain and usually dominant animal?
No, that they did, you know, either shackling and hoisting. Then they just, you know, they did it.
Like in a shtetl, like machinery. How did they usually dominate a Gaza?
Either that or they sort of wrestled it to the ground, and there were ways of doing it. I mean, a guy comes in, you know, the sheikhet comes with a big S on his thing, and he wrestles it down. You know, no, that's not how they you know, they tie strings to the head, and they get it down, and then they tie up the feet. You know, if you want to become a professional cattle wrestler for this, wrestler, not rustler. That's the other story going on lately. So that's the story of the pen, right? And I kept telling the Rabashis, this pen is Narishkeit. It's a misreading of the Shach, and it's going to get you into so much trouble. You ought to get ahead of the curve and say, you know what, I'm taking out that pen and I'm putting in the standard, upright pen. But I couldn't get them. First, the other Rabbi Marshall, Rabbi Weissmandel, who was a very choshev person, he's the son of, you know, the famous Rabbi Weissmandel from Nitra, who tried to save the Jews of Europe. You know, he negotiated with Eichmann. He was a very great and brilliant man. But anyhow, I never got them there. As a matter of fact, this week I spoke to the CEO, now appointed as a trustee of that, you know, that of the company, guy Joe Sharachek. His, I asked him, you know, everybody know the name Red Sharachek here? Red Sharachek was the sort of like a legend. He was the coach of the YU basketball team. And told me that was his grandfather's cousin. And he's now the CEO of the world, such a small world. It ends up that his son is in Ramaz in my son-in-law Yigal's class. But I told him, listen, I'm going to recommend you. I think for efficiency in the plant and for the prestige of the plant, you ought to get rid of that rotary pen. And I've been lobbying against it. I didn't know about this tshuva that the Rabbi Schwartz aired, you know, but it's basically exactly what the Rav said. And, everybody was on board about this shchita and that kind of shchita. Everybody did it like that. The old Satmar Rebbe also. He thought it was a good way to shecht, and that's the way the shecht is. Matter of fact, the problem I have now is I'm trying to get rid of it in Postville, but I met the Satmar Rebbe, you know, now that it gets to Satmar Rebbe's, right? So, and his name is Rabban Teitelbaum. He's the Satmar Rebbe from Monroe. His brother, Reb Zalman, is the Satmar Rebbe from Williamsburg, right? Just you have to hold a cup a little bit on this. But no pun intended. So he's insisting now that they put in a rotary pen in Ali, that in Ali is on the Shatnah Shkacha, and Ali doesn't want to do it. First of all, it's expensive to put in the pen, but that's not the main thing. They know it's going to be inefficient and it's going to bring them political service, you know, puts them again in the crosshairs. And I went to speak to him two or three times about this. I went one time with Rabbi Belsky, and you know, we went through this Minchas Hazemach. I wish I had this tshuva for Moshe. I didn't know about it at the time.
You told it to me.
I told you the tshuva?
Yeah.
So I forgot. It's not the only thing I've been forgetting lately. So what I told the Satmar Rebbe, I remember we had this conversation. This story started about, I remember when Rav Shapira Zichron Levracha was the chief rabbi of Israel. You know, in Israel, they don't permit the importation. No, I shouldn't say they don't permit, but they don't use American meat. And they slaughter in South America. Now, I'm not sure what the real reason is. It's either for economic reasons, but the reason that they give is because in America we have a standing shechita, right? This was before Rabashkin, and the own, and they insist on having the shechita with the animal on the ground, on his back, right? So the shechita with Eshech in South America, you know, it's pretty primitive, and that's the way they shecht. And I told Rabbi Metzger, the chief rabbi now, I said, you are making a mistake. That you're going to, you know, sooner or later, somebody's going to get into this, and it's going to be sooner more than later. And, you know, it's going to be this. I saw what Rubashkin went through. And, you know, these PETA of animal rights people, first of all, they're not necessarily all wrong about the standards. I don't believe they're anti-Semitic, but they're certainly very aggressive, and some of them are loony. I mean, there's a whole range. You know, the woman who started PETA, she wrote a letter famously to Yasser Arafat when Arafat, you know the story with the donkey, right? When the terrorist attacked, they filled the donkey with explosives, they blew it up, they killed innocent, you know, bystanders, Israeli Jews, and she wrote a letter complaining about the use of the donkey. So, because she, I don't mean to say everybody, but you know, she believes existentially, animals and humans, they're all the same. So I think that a famous aphorism was, a flea is to a dog is to a boy. And, you know, they're all essentially the same. I told him that you ought to be thinking about this, because in Eretz Yisrael they're very marked about the Shechita, what they call the Shechita Menachas. So I remember when Rav Shapiro was the Rav of Rashi, I spoke to the Rav about it, and I said, what should I tell him? You know, because, you know, our companies want to sell to Israel also, American companies. So he said, go show him the Rambam. That the Rambam says in Perek, where's this? Ram says in Perek Beis Halacha Zayin, Ketzit Shoichtim, Moseach Hatzava Vamolech Hasakin Meviyah Ad Shoichet, Ben Shehaisa Behema Vavutza, Ben Shehaisa Omedes, Va'achas Ba'afa Vasakim Yadam El Mato Shoch Amezuk Sheva. So that's it's a Mufurish Ram and Ben Omedes. So where do you get this thing? You have to have the animal, you know, Munachas and on its back. So I wrote this letter to Rav Shapiro Bismano, of course to no effect, but when I came in to meet Reb Aaron, we became a little bit friendly after this. I got to like his Tamid Chochma, I got to like him very much. Obviously, we didn't agree about this issue. But so, I remember he starts again and says, Wie haben Sie geschacht in the Zeit von Moshe Rabbeinu? So he said, how did they use the shacht in the time for Moshe Rabbeinu? So I told him, Ich weiß nicht, ob ich weiß, was Rabbeinu Moshe sagt wegen dem. But I said, I know what the Rabbeinu Moshe, I know what the Rambam says about it. And I showed him this Rambam. So he tells his Gabbai, bring me a Rambam. And looks at the Rambam. I told him this is Yoshi Be'er's Rambam. So he says, Taka Shteta's in the Rambam. That's Taka what the Rambam says. So I thought, you know, I thought I'd won the war. No way, you know, that was the first, you know, that's what the Rambam says. But, you know, this, you know, like to say, Shal HaChum is Lon in Alu, and, you know, if you have another Chum, why not? Says and tells, explains, once explained to me the Litva. Vas heistas a chassid. What does a chassid mean? So he said a chassid means that he looks for every chumla and so on. So I asked him, Eibazoi, how come you're not makbir on chodesh? So he didn't know what to answer. So I said, this you have a minchas hazevach. Who even knows who the minchas hazevach is? You know, for him he's just a shoicher. Who's the minchas hazevach? But you know, Lov Rishonim hold that it's chodesh is awesome in that Torah. You know, there's no the Bach set that doesn't. The Shabbos Arish writes Chayvakayim about it. So somebody told me. So he didn't have an answer right away. But then they told me that they asked the old Satmar Rebbe why he's not makbir on Chodesh. And he said he's not makbir on Chodesh because there is a kula de Bach. And he said if you'll be makbir on Chodesh, you'll be mekel on toloin, because the flour, you'd have to buy old flour and it'll end up being matliya. And then somebody told me that they have a kabbalah from the Baal Shem Tov. That the Baal Shem Tov gave Epesh Yashkoyach to the Bach for his Heter and Chodesh, But you heard about that? Anyhow, so that's why. But anyhow, that's how this conversation was going. But
he had it in a vision.
That's what. Right. I thought I'd slowed him down, but last week I spoke to Shia Halmda, and he told me that they've already spent $400,000 in France to build this inverting pen, which they're putting in one of their slaughterhouses in Texas. So, you know, I'm still fighting the battle, but I think the Rav was right about it, both in terms of public policy, we have to move away from this because it's just going to get us in trouble. And there's no advantage. It's just like the Moshe has, it's just a misreading of this.
The Rosh Hashanah mentioned this earlier that Rosh Hashanah is sort of a communal, a representative of the community.
Right.
If our kigiva, or if the community in general has certain ethical standards, whether dealing with ethical workers, child labor, is it important for Shoftin to abide by those standards since they are the community representatives?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes. I mean, it does mean to say that if somehow, if you violate one of those rules, that the shechita becomes possible.
Right.
But we see that, we want to avoid Chil Hashem in every place, whether it's in, somebody running a shady, hedge fund, right? Or not living up to legal requirements. In terms of animal welfare, child labor, environmental issues, and all of those, we want to make sure that those are in place. There's no question about it. When I spoke here the other night, I said that the Rambam, if you look at the Rambam, where does the Rambam put Hilchos Shechita? It puts it in Kedusha, right? And because everything has to, with the discipline in our lives, which is reflected by Kashrus, it shouldn't be limited only to that. That's what the Ramban says, Kedoshim Tiyo, that you shouldn't be maneuverable Shus HaTorah.
Are there efforts that are being taken in the kashrus industry, in the industry to make sure that those standards are enforced?
Well, we have a provision in our contract that if somebody violates and is indicted or violates the law, that we have the option to withdraw the supervision. But the RCA is working on trying to create some kind of standard.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, these standards are difficult to establish. They're amorphous. They can't just be I think the standards ought to be. They ought to be in operate in consonance with the law of the land. And the ones who are most effective in handling that are federal and state agencies that have expertise and a mandate and know what they're doing. Should the OU say how much arsenic should be in the water? I said, the Bush administration thinks that arsenic is a food additive. That's one of the first things they did when I became president, lower the standards. But good times are ahead, don't worry. Things are changing. Yeah.
You mentioned that those people from Pita are very aggressive. What if the Shechita, as we know, is like a cruel way of killing animals? What is their? What do they offer as an alternative? Offer us to become all vegetarians?
Their goal is that everybody should be vegans, not complete vegetarians.
Yeah,
but
they want us to become all vegetarians.
Right, don't take it so personally. It's not. But they acknowledge. To be fair to them, they're not opponents per se of Shechita. They think of the ways of killing. That Shechita is if properly done, is a humane form of killing the animal. They're just conceptually against all killing of animals or use of animals, even. Peter's not just against, they're vegans, I imagine, most of them, many of them, not all, but first of all, it's a big organization. There's a whole range of people. Many of them, by the way, are Jewish.
It's a Jewish organization?
No, it's not a Jewish organization. Many of the members are Jewish. American Jews who are looking for spirituality, what do? They either join Peter or they join the Democratic Party. But that's it. That's their notion. I think I quoted, I saw, what's his name? Brookhiser. He's a historian. He writes a lot about the founding fathers. He has a great book on Hamilton. So he has a wonderful quote. He said the only difference between Reform Judaism and the Democratic Party is the holidays. So, you know, so my point was, don't assume that they're anti-Semitic. I don't think they are. You know, that's their agenda in terms of animal welfare, and I don't think all of it is completely alien to us. Tzar Bale Chaim is a principle that we believe in as well. So, I mean, and they're trying, they're getting smart, they're not as aggressive. You know, some things they used to do were, I said loony, but really destructive and crazy. And there are elements on the extremes of these that are very dangerous, and I think we'd have to call them terrorists. What are the ones, I forgot what they're called, you know, they blow up that chalet. What are they called?
Oh, elf?
What?
Like elf or something?
I don't remember that, it just slips my mind. They're not Peter, but they're just saying within the, you know, the environment. What were they called? What are they called? Anyhow, I see nobody here was a member. That's
Greenpeace
good.
Greenpeace or Earth First?
What?
Greenpeace, Earth First.
I don't remember. No, it's...
not
what? Yeah, so, all right.
I just have another question. Do they know that certain kinds of animals cannot exist without human growing them? In other words, if there's no farms for breeding those species by themselves in a wild, they're just going to perish.
You know, I don't know. You know, they're against use of animals on any. You know, they're against animals being used in for scientific research. For you know. I'm not their advocate. I don't want to be their spokesman. So, you know, I don't know. Do they know about that? There are lots of things. But my point is we ought to relate to them and understand, because sometimes they make a point that's valid. And we also have an agenda of Tzar Bale Chaim. So we want to also mitigate pain to animals. And that's a halachic requirement. So, you know, we don't, you know, obviously we take offense with it. Remember, they used to have an ad campaign about Holocaust on the plate. Do you remember that one? They had, you know, in Holocaust killing, you know. So obviously we're not on the, you know, the same wavelength on those things, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't relate to them and think about it and be concerned about these issues. You know, I want to tell you something. Just in terms of the story of Rubashkin, you know, I think it's an outrage the way the Rubashkins have been treated. You know, and I'm not one who whitewashed what they say or think, you know, but you know that this guy, Bernie Madoff, is out on bail. I mean, the man, the damage this amoral person did, and Rubashkin can't even get bail. And what's the alleged crime? I mean, he may be guilty of that crime, but it's that he had hired illegal aliens, like about half the country, and that he was and that he hid certain assets in during the bankruptcy. You know, so he. I'm not saying, and I don't condone it if it's true, right? But for that to deny bail, you know. The aggressive agenda that the union had there and he was made vulnerable by Peter is I find it just outrageous. You know, 9,000 counts for children. It's just if you go into the, you know, you'd think that plant was who knows what, you know, Auschwitz. It wasn't. So I'm you know, I'm saddened by what happened. I'm saddened that they didn't, you know, that they. No, they didn't have the. They weren't able to see beyond the curve, and to think ahead, and to run the operation so it should be a Kiddush Hashem, and not what ended up being the opposite. In you know, in the light of the media, but the portrayal is very unbalanced, completely not nuanced, and it's very unfortunate. So that's why I think that this issue about the Shechita Menachos is an important issue, because we have to try to think ahead to make sure that. You know, Shechit is protected, and the image of the, you know, the Frum community and even beyond, the general Jewish community is that image is an appropriate one, and people relate to it properly. We want that because we want to also have an opportunity for the non-Frum world, you know, to bring them to be interested in kosher, and not to alienate them. We have to be sensitive to that, so we have to balance all these different requirements. And that's why, you know, in the story of Peter, I arranged with some difficulty to get Temple Grandin, who's a world expert in animal welfare. She's in Colorado State, a professor of animal something or other, you know, animal welfare, I don't know exactly the phrase. But you know, she's an autistic woman, very, very famous, wrote books on the New York Times World Bestsellers list. And, you know, that was part of what we were trying to do, to set up a system, because, you know, that all of us can read, that it meets a certain standard. Us, Peter, the industry, you know, if we could reach that kind of a standard, that we should. Okay. to what time are we supposed to go?
They're supposed to go to 40.
Okay. So let me just to say a few more things from the Rav on Hoshkita, unless anybody has any questions. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not sure maybe I didn't answer it before. So is Tzar Bali kind of an issue after Shkita?
The answer is, you know, I would think yes. If it's Mefachesas, it would still be an issue. Potentially, but you know, Tzar Bel Chaim is not as broad as people think. I mean, if it's the Tzorach Odom, then Tzar Bel Chaim is Mutter, otherwise Shechita would have been forbidden. So, you know, not everything is Tzar Bel Chaim. You know, it reminds me of the joke, you know, they tell the story about the Rav that they came to him on Shabbos, and they said that the ox, you know, the shore fell into the boar. What do we do? And so he said, first came a ton about Shabbos, it's Buxa. He says, Rebbe, it's your ox. Tzabar Chaim, you know. Tzabar Chaim, there are, you know, if it's a Tzorach Odom, it serves a purpose, it's a useful purpose, then it's Mutter. But to the extent that it can be mitigated, you know, Tzabar Chaim is a Torah principle.
Is there a problem per se with having an animal for a Shabbat?
Yes. We have to know that the animal can move, so that we have to make sure that it's not, you know, dead, so you can't anesthetize it. And the other problem we have is, which they do in a lot of shkitas, in some governments, for example in Australia, they require that they shoot the animal immediately after the shkita. So that's a problem, because it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to hit the animal on the head. To kill immediately after the shkita, either because it's mavliya dam be'evorim, the dam won't come out, and so there's either there's a chosh mishpat problem that, you know, you're going to sell meat that has a lot of blood, so you're charging for the blood meat prices, or it's a halachic problem that maybe it's from mavliya dam be'evorim and it will not come out through malichim. So that's a problem. In certain countries they don't let you do it. So the Moshe says if it's a few seconds after, I mean, he used the word ragoim, but he means seconds. So, you know, because then it had a chance to bleed out. So then, you know, it's permitted. But these issues about anesthetizing animals and so on, stunning animals before, you know, issues that were dealt with, you know, with the Eved, what's the halacha, the tshuvas from Chaim Oiz about it before World War II, the Ragat Shova has a tshuva about it. Yeah?
I was a little confused about the Metzius. In terms of the way the animals were shepherded, so he said that meat is more expensive or better when the blood drains out very quickly, because the blood stays in the animal longer than it soaks into the meat and gets black or blue, as he said.
No, we don't know exactly what happens. It's called the blood shock. Name just came back to me. Or blood splash. And that somehow, when the animal's under stress, it retains some of the blood, and that blood that's retained, you know, the meat is lower quality, and it could be even a kashrus problem. So they're looking for ways to to, you know, eliminate that or limit that blood stress. And actually, Temple Grandin claims that when the animal is less stressed out before the shechita, for example, it has a good gripping when it goes up on the floor. So that's one of the things she'll do. She'll check to see, you know, that the animal has is not sliding. You know, it has, it's not slippery where it's walking. These are the kind of things, and the way the shechita is done have an impact on this, you know, this problem. And that's what they're trying to do. You know, the second cut, as they called it, is to try to accelerate the bleeding to avoid that.
So you say that the kind of rhythm with the shechita is the best thing to also, right?
Right, you're supposed to cut the bleeding, right.
So Pita and we both hold that you should do shechita rhythm in order to avoid the issue of bloodshot, in order to avoid...
Yeah, no, but you should do it. I mean, we do it also because we don't want to have blood in the animal. But the problem over here was they were taking the trachea out and slicing the vein, the artery. You know, there are better ways to do it. That you know, you know, part of what Peter does, which is really very unfair, is they take these videos. Sometimes it's a problem, sometimes they're not. But any person, the layman, seeing the shechita, you know, it's not pretty. And it's, you know, you could say whatever you want about it, and they'll... What?
You can put the videos up, there's if you want. Yeah.
You can put them up here, you mean now?
Some of us ain't.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying, the videos they have, there's nothing wrong with it. It's standard, you know. They make it sound like something horrible is happening. You know, I mean, if you take the videos and you see the way they're doing in South America, that would be, in fact, they're more problematic. But and something that we should really, which I'm trying to address, but... You know, we have to balance all of these things. That's not our only concern. Our concern is also to have stable supply of meat at reasonable prices that people can afford it. So we have to balance, you know, all of these different things.
What was the problem with the trachea?
No, I'm just saying what they were doing is they were taking the trachea out after the shechita, and it looked like they were yanking it out and then slicing it. So they said that the animal was still alive when this was happening. Well, in most cases, that wasn't true. The animal after the shechita, when you cut the venom, was dead. And that's what the USD inspectors who were there, they thought that was the case, and there's constant USD inspection. But we have to acknowledge that there is a certain amount of animals, for the reasons that I mentioned, either because the anatomy of the animal or because the artery sealed and therefore there was still blood available in the brain, that, you know, made it still conscious. You know, the first statements that some people made were actually inaccurate. In fact, we let it, you know, that this is like a chicken without a head. It's an involuntary, you know, action, not a conscious act. That apparently is not true. That, you know, when an animal walks around, that kind of coordinated muscle activity is conscious action.
The Rosh Yeshiva mentioned that it's less cost-effective to have the rotating pen, but if I'm not mistaken, well, under Rubashkin, the prices of meat had gone down significantly. Would that not seem to be
fakir? Yeah, no, that's not fakir. It's true that Lubashkin, to their credit, you know, the prices were kept relatively low because there was significant competition in the market, and they because of their own, you know, who they were, they wanted people to eat kosher. So that doesn't mean it couldn't be less. I'm just saying it's a built-in inefficiency. I mean, and the inefficiency is not insignificant. It's 33%. That doesn't mean the whole plant is too efficient. It means that aspect of it, the shechita, is inefficient. Any other questions? All right. You know, maybe I'll...
Sorry. Are there two kinds of pens we're talking about? The rotary
yes.
Pen? Okay.
There's the rotary pen, and then there's the standard pen, the upright pen.
That uses places.
Right. Which is the one that I read. You know, I'll just... I'll just tell you one short hayor from the Rav, and we'll just close with this. You know, there's... I mentioned one of the halachas of shechita is sakin pogum, right? And there's machlokes why that's not good. Machlokes in Rashi v'Hag, whether that's because that's the halacha of ikur, or if you hold that ikur is the daldu simanim bim koman, then sakin pokum is not a halacha of shechita. Then sakin pokum is what? simply that that's not called shchita, because it's koveh, it's not shochet, it's tearing of not shechted, right? So the Rav said whether it's a psul shchita or what, a just afkos shchita depends on this machlokes, because if it's one the hilchos shchita, that's a psul shchita, sakin pogum. But if it's not one the hilchos shchita, iku means the dal. So what about sakin pogum? Why is that good? And that's because that's simply a matter of definition. Shchita doesn't mean sakin pogum. That if you use a saw, you're not shechting, you're sawing. So the Rav said that this, so the last thing the Nafka mean about this would be, which the Shach quotes, what's the locha of Sakin Pogum B'miyad Baswa? So Rav said it should depend on the Shaila. If the locha of Sakin Pogum is a Psul Shchita, then B'miyad Baswa, it'll pass it. But if Sakin Pogum is what? Not called Shchita, it's not a Psul Shchita, simply if that's not Shchita, then it wouldn't pass it, B'miyad Baswa. So I'll close with that for.
Can somebody be appointed to just be a shchita and not to do the bidukas?
Yeah.
So could a woman then do that? Is that instead of form of shara, she's not telling people to do it or not?
Right.